J6, number 10B.
Yes, before I turned the tape, I was saying that there isn't that teacher-student relationship on a personal basis. There's where the danger comes in. There's where we get the false sense of theology and how the line that kings are crowned from a royal dynasty, that the mantle falls on one individual or a few that lead on the centuries. People don't teach. People can't teach. It's the principle that is teaching. So we turn away from personality to the principle. It has nothing to do with the teacher that is up there. It's just mind speaking to mind, spirit speaking to spirit, soul speaking to soul, principle speaking to principle, life speaking to life, truth speaking to truth, love speaking to love. Therefore, it's so important that we impersonalize everything. That's why it comes as to us as our only authority, and you'll see the attitude it brings up as it impersonalizes everything. So the only teacher that is going on in this class is the principal is teaching. That's teaching us, not a personal teacher. We're learning the principal is teaching all of us what it is. There's no personal authority. That's why we can go to any teacher. We don't have to choose one that we like and follow it. Because we should be able to go to any teacher who sticks up for the principal. Because the principal is teaching us, not that teacher. And so in any class, it does. The teachers can come and go, but the principal will last forever. Mrs. Eddy said, revelators will take their place, but they will not be deified. And the greatest error or sin we could do would be to deify revelators. That would be the worst thing anybody could do to anybody, is to make them a personal teacher, a personal priest, a personal nun, a personal this. Then that really gets into animal magnetism. Then, as we saw yesterday, we lose the oceanicness of it, don't we? A drop cannot carry this idea, but the ocean can. And the safety of the idea is, as we'll see in principle, it becomes impersonal. And whoever is who is a representative of God, it has a. Mrs. Eddy said, "Follow me as long as I follow principle." That's what it is. So, always in any organization, as we know, the danger of personality comes in, and that is a big danger. But it's good. I mean, it's good that issues come up of personalities and one choosing one or one choosing the other, and now this is the one I follow and this one I follow. That's good because it just keeps principle. It's positive. We look for the blessing behind these things because it allows us to say no, that our subject is a science. It's an impersonal science. It has nothing to do with personality. If that issue comes up, then it's just to be talked down. It's a blessing. It just puts the subject on a stronger foundation, and it just a testing of a subject to say, all right, that is not Christian science. It's a lie. That Christian science is that principle is our only teacher. And it's working out good. You could also say that principle is our only practitioner. I have no other practitioner than that practitioner, which is principle. My goodness, how horrible it would be to personalize practice. That this person is a medium to God. That's spiritualism. That they have special communication to the principle, or a better communication than someone else to the principle. That is putting quite something on somebody's shoulders. It's mediumship. It's spiritualism. And that is not right either. It has to be totally that our only teacher is the our only authority is the principle, our only teacher is the principle, our only practitioner is the principle, the only giver of our life experience is the principle, and that principle is working out the maximum of good. That's why the first day of the class I talked about, we're servants of the Spirit, and we're not prisoners of any organization. Always we must be maintain within ourselves to be servants of principle God and never of any organization. My organization, right or wrong, my teacher, right or wrong. I always know when I first started teaching, not so much, but more in the early 70s, that the students that would come to the classes would always say to me, well, my teacher said, you know, from the church. For some reason, it just doesn't happen so much anymore, but always, when I would say something, then a little hand would go up. Well, my teacher said, yeah. But it was always that sense of a personal teacher. So now I guess it's falling away because we're all seeing clearer and clearer that that principle is our only teacher. That's where the way it comes to us. Huh? What's wonderful, that system is teaching us according to its methods of interpretation, according to its standard. The seven synonymous terms are teaching us what God is. The word Christ, Christianity, and science are teaching how God operates. The levels of science itself, divine science and absolute Christian science and Christian science, they're teaching us the dimension of God. And they have within themselves the checks and balances, don't they? I mean, they teach us. They're the ones who, if we adhere to a scientific criteria, they teach. It's a self-teaching system. Once we have the system, it teaches itself. Once we've learned it. So that is a suppositional opposite. Therefore, that is always proving itself. It's demonstrating itself. That system comes to the realm of the suppositional opposite, and it never pardons, meaning that it doesn't have to pardon anything. It never is wrong. It's always right. It acts as a system that is always proving itself under every single situation. Always demonstrating itself, always solving problem. It's always going on. And the attitude that it raises up in the human is that it demands obedience to the principle, to that self-operating principle, that self-interpreting principle. It demands honesty to the principle, loyalty to the principle. It demands impersonality. There it is. It's not loyalty to a teacher, loyalty to a practitioner, loyalty to this one, loyalty to that one. It's loyalty always to the principle. It's never my party right or wrong, my practitioner right or wrong, my teacher right or wrong. That's what Brown was bringing out in that article of Servants to the Spirit. Our real loyalty, honesty, obedience is to the principle, and that's the scientific attitude, isn't it? And that would always keep us to be an extraordinary scientist rather than an ordinary scientist, wouldn't it? If we're loyal to the principle, which is always evolving, we would always be extraordinary scientists. We would never become a scientist that sticks in the ruts, because the principle is ever operating, always moving, always organizing itself through its input, process, output, feedback, spiraling higher and higher. Loyalty to that principle would always give us the scientific attitude to go forward, wouldn't it? That's the right scientific attitude. And how that principle appears when it's misunderstood, well, as personal sense, huh? As personal theories, as personal dogmas, as personal hypothesis, as personal speculation, Or how does it appear when it's misunderstood as an anthropomorphic God, as a man-like God, rather than an impersonal law? Wonderful tone of principle. All right, then we go on into the fifth day of life, and we see then that fifth day we say, all right, let there be life, let the life which is God be my life, let me have no other life than that life which is God. Therefore, in the Bible, it gave us the symbols of the teeming of fish and fowl. And we saw then that fish just stood for the multiplication of life, the abundance of life, the newness of life, as a symbol, because in those days, as we said, the fish had many, many eggs. They multiplied prolifically. So therefore, fish always stood for fullness, multiplication, and birds always stood for the exaltation above the earth, which was the exaltation above the mortal concept of life. And that gives us then the willingness to live by that life source by laying down the false concept of life. That's love. True love is the willingness to lay down the mortal concept of life for the life which is God. That's true life. That's that where we give up our life for a friend, which is God, of the Christ. That we're willing to lay down our mortal concept of life. Not to lay down our life, that would be a false sense of sacrifice. But it's to lay down just the mortal concept or false concept of life for the life which is God. That's the greater love hath no man. All right, then we just do a simple exercise now with life. Now we're on page 75 in the study aid. So we again say, all right, now the life which is God is our life. We never had, have, or shall have any other life than the life which is God. And life will heal the past as well as the present as well as the future. An understanding and practice will heal. If we feel we had a past that we didn't like, relationships that didn't work, and we're sorry we said to somebody something we said, and we keeps coming back to us that we said something that we're sorry about, now we're never going to be able to take it back. This person moved off somewhere and we'll never see them or something. And so or we had an experience that we feel that we're sorry for, that we should have done it a little differently and all that, through our ignorance. This heals all that. It heals the past as well as the present as well as the future, insofar as that you say, all right, the life which is God, regardless of how it's looked, it always has been my life, it always is my life, and it always shall be my life. The only record written about me is from the book of life, and that's the only record that sticks. The record that mortal mind has written and the experiences I've had in mortal mind are an illusion. They don't stand. They never were. They are an unreality. Why should I believe in them now that they happened in the past? You can go right in and heal the past and just see that that was never the truth about the situation. It was just a lie. And you can and a lie can be reversed because it's always in the state of timelessness. So, therefore, Jesus healed the past as well as the future, you see. That's how he could heal many people of their prenatal claims before they were born into matter, or beliefs of why they were in the womb. All these beliefs that are holding on to us, that, you know, today they say that even a child in the womb hears everything, the mother's voice, all the voices around now, the mother is upset, or the mother is an alcoholic, or the mother's on cocaine, or whatever today, you know, all that affects the child. Well, the child can grow up deformed. So that child can be healed by a sense of any experience of the past from the now. Doesn't have to suffer according to those laws of causality. Within the realm of mortal belief, that it is subject only to the laws of isness, which are always coming anew to the situation. That means it brings newness to the past, present, and future. So we come now and see that that one life which is God, and what is life as it knows itself? Life knows itself as the isness of being, as the infinite individuality of being. As that self-existent being, there's only the one life which is God. It knows itself as that one life, that one self-existent being. There is only one life. How is life in its own realm? How does life appear in the universe? Life appears as that ever-present fullness of life. It appears as the nowness of life. That isness of life appears as the nowness of life. It appears as the fatherhood of life. It appears as that ever-present, timeless, spaceless life. That's where that instantaneous healing appears. That's where you get the, on divine science, that the healing of the past, present, and future on divine science. Because out of the isness of life comes the timelessness and spacelessness of life. See, Jesus was at work in divine science. He didn't believe in time periods. That's a mortal concept. And so he said, you believe in time periods. He said, but behold, the field is already white with harvest. And so he was at work, Mrs. Eddy, in divine science. That's how he could heal any sense of time or any experiences in time and space right now. That's what divine science does. That's what all that I was saying is a divine science standpoint. It heals it right now in the timeless sense of the nowness. And therefore, our consciousness begins to welcome being able to live in the ever-present, eternal nowness. That is hard, but if we do, we'll get rid of that sense of frantic time in the world. See, it acts as a law of annihilation to time. That's one of that time or death. That we're ever born in matter, live in matter, grow old in matter, or die out of matter. You see in column 7, that's the claim. But a consciousness at work in divine science, we learn to live in the ever-present timelessness of being, the nowness of being, the eternal nowness of the ever-present timelessness of being. And that gives us, as it says, a full sense. And how does life appear in relationship to its creation? It appears as the fatherhood of life. It appears as that fatherhood of life, which is always providing for its ideas, always sustaining its ideas, always sustaining its ideas spontaneously, instantaneously, and immediately, out of the isness of being, science itself. Out of the nowness of being, spontaneously comes out of that infinite well of life, that infinite abundance of life, that infinite reservoir of life. Life is always providing for us as the fatherhood of life, spontaneously, instantaneously, and immediately. Out of that infinite well of life, life is providing us with what? Money? Huh? Is that what we're after? Dear God, give us lots of money. God is always providing for us out of the infinite well of life money. Doesn't sound quite right, does it? No. Dead matter? No. Life is always providing for us out of the infinite well of life the substance of life itself. And that sustains us. What else can give us life but life itself? What is of more substance to us than life? Does money give us life? No, that's a false concept. Money doesn't give anybody life at all. It often brings death because of its false values. Huh? So we see that. I just love this. I always love that. See, how does it come to the human? I'm going down to point four. Life supplies us out of the infinite source of life spontaneously, instantaneously, and immediately. It comes as man's life support in column 4 to the human and supplying us with ideas, with the substance of life itself. And you stand in awe and just think that life, the Father, is supplying us out of the infinite well of life, the substance of life. Then you begin to think, nothing else can give us life. Gee, that's all I want is the substance of life. That is a value. Especially if we're struggling with the concept of death. Suddenly, life means takes on a greater value than money. So we turn away from the dead matter and we welcome that life is sustaining us with ideas, with inspiration, with the newness of life. And that, what does it do in its suppositional opposite? It overcomes death or dead matter because it's supplying us always with life. It overcomes a sense of lack because it supplies us with ideas, and those ideas bring us supply, don't they? It's in the world where those ideas are always then valued. And then it looks like we're given money for them at this time and space. But what brings the money would be the ideas, the creative ideas. So one always has to trust one's creativity. The ideas that come to us, those are sustaining us. Those bring the wealth to us. Those uplift us. Those ideas exalt us above the earthly concept. Those ideas renew us. Those ideas resuscitate us. Those ideas regenerate us. Those ideas come to us irresistibly. See, we begin to value ideas. And what higher attitude does that raise up into the human? It gives us, again, that soaring consciousness, that exaltation of consciousness that rises above corporeality, above the belief in dead matter, laying down the mortal concept of life and following the way of life itself. We become a pioneer with the newness of ideas that are always coming to us. It makes us a pioneer, always to go forward with those ideas. Ideas make us a pioneer. And that overcomes the belief of death in time and space. Because if we're always, if God our Father is always providing us out of the infinite isness of being, out of the nowness of being, the isness of being, the timeless and spacelessness of being, ideas are always coming in their ever-present, timeless, spaceless form. It overcomes the belief of time, which is just death, or destruction, or lack. And often there's that belief that a pioneer of truth is persecuted, that you see, death is that sense of inertia, that it doesn't want to go forward with the flow of life, you see. It wants to resist the flow of life, to persecute the flow of life. That's why a pioneer of truth, the claim is that it's got to be persecuted for its forward development. But we can see that Mrs. Eddy showed us in the Animal Magnetism Unmasked chapter that with a consciousness filled with the allness of God and its ideas, that's against such a consciousness there is no law, that a pioneer of truth and its family can only be blessed for the forward development because it's only being supplied by life with the abundance of the ideas of mind and the abundance of the ideas of spirit and the abundance of the ideas of principle, life, truth, and love. That can only bless us. It can't persecute us. It's a false claim that's handled through the fifth day of life. All right? We come to the sixth day of truth, and we say, all right, then let there be truth. Let the truth which is God be our truth. Let us have no other truth than the truth which is God. And therefore, the biblical writers gave us the symbols of the animals in man, and we saw then that animals stood for individual spiritual qualities of God. And therefore, we could see then that man was the compound of all these qualities, that holistic concept, as Gloria pointed out, there of man, that man is the compound idea, where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, that man is a holographic gestalt form of all those ideas working together, make up what we call idea man. And that constitutes our spiritual consciousness, spiritual manhood, and those ideas give us dominion in the realm of truth, as well as in the realm of error. And that impact is letting the spiritual consciousness have dominion in our life, letting that Christ consciousness, that consciousness of the ideal whole spiritual man, that consciousness has dominion over the mortal consciousness of called man. And we see here that that's working from the whole through its science and structure. That's holism. That's as we have seen. So we go to the point of truth and see how truth structures itself dimensionally. On page 76 in the study aid. And we see then that We say, all right, what is truth in its own realm? How does truth see itself? Truth always sees itself as the ideal standard, as that whole standard, that standard where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. So the truth, which is God, is our truth. We have no other ideal standard of consciousness than the ideal standard, which is truth itself. That's the only standard we have. We have no other standard. And how does that standard of truth appear in the universe? It appears as that, as being ever at work. That, therefore, we should glorify in the fact that that ideal standard is ever at work. It's the only standard at work. When we feel disappointed in the human and we see that it looks like false standards are at work, inferior standards are at work in the world, we say, no, that really the only ideal standard of God is at work, self-claiming, self-affirming that standard as an all-penetrating standard in the universe. That's the only universal, ever-operative, self-claiming, self-affirming, self-penetrating standard in the world. And that comes to each individual idea as a standard for every idea. Every idea has as its standard that standard of truth. It has no other standards. Therefore, there should be a universal standard for a standard of all standards. So we don't finally say, well, that's the standard of the Europeans. They act this way and they behave that way. It's not the standard of the Americans. Or that's the standard of the people in South Africa. It's not our standard. There has to be a universal standard. Eventually, yes, we have tolerance for people's various standards now, but eventually our tolerance is only insofar as we know that Christ will bring one ideal standard to the whole world. It's not this eye for an eye or tooth for a tooth business or revenge business that goes on that brings all this terrorism according to a standard that is lived by. They believe in the standard. But one has to see that there will be one standard, that Christ is bringing this one ideal standard to every individual idea. That's that column three, becomes the truth about everything. And that comes to the human as the voice of truth, comes to the human as revelation. That standard is coming to us and bringing us the faultlessness of the standard, is making us unerring. That standard is directing everything in the human, directing all things to bring out the right solution. That standard is establishing the idea in us. That standard is giving us dominion. It's bringing out our true manhood. It brings health. You see, when we adhere to the, it causes us to adhere to that ideal standard which brings health, the true man. True man is just that ideal standard. So it brings to us through revelation that ideal standard which gives us dominion. And how does that ideal standard which comes to every one of us, which gives us dominion and true manhood and health, brings divine justice everywhere? See, we always say, well, the human has no justice. Well, it would have justice if it had that ideal standard. Then there would be justice. But we always have to say about the human, there's never any justice in this realm. But there would be, and there will be, through the Christ, because it brings that divine justice, which unveils error and uncovers error, and finally destroys error according to that standard. And therefore, it's the universal remedy. That's why truth is the remedy, because that standard then becomes a remedy for all situations. And what attitude does it raise up in the human? Well, then we take hold of that truth. We take hold of that ideal standard of truth. We adhere to it. We affirm it. We claim it. We utilize it. We uphold it in our consciousness, and it brings to us pure consciousness, and it brings to us the brotherhood of man. That ideal standard is going to bring the brotherhood of man. Nothing else will. When we all have the same standard, we're all one. But until that Christ brings us the same standard of values, we're always going to be different until it breaks through on every standpoint. So it will break through, and it will bring to us that brotherhood. And on no other basis will we get through brotherhood.